Really?
They follow.
Oh, well. It's communion day, so it could have been like dinner and a show, right? You know, where we go. I want to, continue a little bit on what Jared was talking about. What does it take to follow Jesus? Okay. What does it take to be a follower of Jesus? You're followers of Jesus, right? Kind of complicated, right? Can be kind of tough to answer. I would say if I were to just sit here in silence and let you keep answering long enough, like we would do like the Pharisees do and we'd keep one-upping, right, until we finally get to the point of, it takes everything, right? And we would uphold that, wouldn't we? Like we would say that to follow Jesus, it takes everything. But that's a little bit, what's the word, nebulous maybe? I mean, that's a little formless. Like it's a little, how do you really wrap your head around it takes everything? Because that sounds completely undoable. Can you imagine going into a job interview and the person interviewing you was like, this job is going to be great. It will require everything you have, every ounce of you. Would that be like, all right, get to it? Or would it be like, okay, I think I might keep looking, you know, right? I mean, like, because how do you understand what does that mean? What does that look like? When we start talking about, in order to be a follower of Christ, Christ needs all of us. Sometimes I think it's kind of flowery language, and it's powerful language, but we don't often know how to connect that kind of language to the life we're actually living. And so we kind of want to do the best we can, and we kind of work our way through. But in the end, sometimes we ourselves end up feeling very confused about what it actually takes to be a follower of Christ. And many of us end up spending much of our lives feeling like whatever we're doing isn't enough. And this Christ who meets us in the midst of our lives and proclaims love, compassion, grace, patience, mercy, all these things over us, the God who loves us just as we are, who meets us right in the midst of this life, pretty soon, like just kind of based on the way we talk to ourselves about what it is to follow God, like we can end up feeling like failures. We can end up feeling like we're just not following Christ very well. And sometimes that's true. Like sometimes it's true for us that we're not really following Christ very well. And other times we've just caught ourselves in this loop of the way we talk to ourselves and the way we talk to others about what it actually is to follow Jesus. And it's strange that an invitation that is the most beautiful thing we can ever receive in this life, an invitation that you are loved beyond measure, not because of what you've done, not because of what you're going to do, but because of who you are and how God made you and who God is the most amazing invitation you'll ever get in your life. It's the most incredible thing you'll ever hear. That the creator of all the universe thinks you're wonderful, thinks you're worth dying for, thinks that you have something compelling to offer, that God would give up everything to be reunited with you. And when you feel estranged, when you feel separated, that this loving God is right there calling you in, calling you home. It's the most spectacular thing you could ever experience. And yet sometimes like we end up talking ourselves down, and before you know it, this faith that is supposed to be full of hope and life and newness can end up feeling kind of heavy and borderline shameful, borderline guilt. Like all of these things that the love of Christ casts out, sometimes we end up multiplying and we end up building. And I think sometimes that puts us in an odd spot because we are in this place where, you know what, when we say yes to Jesus, that's not the end, that's beginning, right? Like when we give Jesus our heart, That's not like, okay, that's it. You're in the club. Your name's in the book. Congratulations. Go back to business as usual. No. No, when we say yes to Jesus, that's when God finally says, all right, now we can get started. Now we can get started. I've been with you all along. Now let's do something together. And so we spend this life seeking, searching, trying to follow, trying to... The word I really like is respond. The more and more we experience God's grace, the more and more we encounter God's love, the more and more we have opportunity to respond to it. In truth, that's what offering is when we gather to worship. Did you know that? That offering is not supposed to come out of compulsion. It's not supposed to come out of something that's required of you, something you have to do. It doesn't come out of tradition because everybody around you is doing it. When we bring a tithe, that is a response, an acknowledgement to what God has done. When we bring before God that gift, that's us saying, I recognize that everything I have comes from you. And this is my celebration, my public declaration, that everything I have, the very air I breathe, comes from you. I do this as celebration in honor of you, and I do this putting my trust in you, God, that everything I need comes from your hand. You're the one who goes before me. You're the one who is behind me. You're the one who surrounds me on all sides, who loves me. You have given me everything that I need. I am with you today. Help me trust you with tomorrow. I mean, that's what we're doing. When we bring our tithe, when we bring our offering before God, it is a response to God. But sometimes a response to God, we're kind of insecure. We don't really know what that response is supposed to be. We do the best we can, and sometimes we feel like we're missing. Sometimes we, you know, sometimes the way that we're responding to God, we're doing the best we can, but we still maybe feel like we don't really know what we're doing. And there's times when that's the best we can do, because God is always greater than us, always beyond us. And sometimes, like, we're just, God, I'm giving you what I got. I'm going to pour out the best I have, and I hope you can do something with it. And sometimes that's our beautiful offering. I think other times we're so busy moving, we're just kind of little balls of endless motion, that we aren't able to slow down and actually be in God's presence, experience God in a new way, and maybe hear, see, taste, touch, smell, experience something of God that leads us. This idea of being led by the Spirit is, it's more than a prayer, it's more than a body motion, it's more than any of those things. And in truth, I think it's actually a discipline. It's a discipline in our own lives of silencing other things so that we can hear the one true thing, of slowing down and taking our focus off of so many other things so we can put our focus where it really needs to be, and perhaps see something we need to see. If you have your Bibles with you, I encourage you to turn with me. We're going to go Old Testament again today. We're going to go Exodus chapter 3. This will be familiar. Exodus chapter 3. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. In other places in the Bible, that's also referred to as perhaps Sinai. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in the flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, that's weird. Okay, I'm paraphrasing. I will go over and see this strange sight. Why the bush does not burn up? When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses! And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Now, familiar story, yeah? I mean, even from the time we're real little, we start learning about this burning bush. Because there's something about kind of mystical things in the Bible that capture the imagination. Like, there's a lot of things in this story of God that, you know, we start to pick up, we study, we learn along the way. But there's certain images that just, that's there. The idea of a bush that's on fire, and yet the fire's not consuming it. The bush isn't getting charred. It's not getting consumed. It's still a bush, but it's completely engulfed in flames. That's a strange thing. I'd go over and check that out too. I'd go over and inspect it. Now, there's so many different things that we could look at as we talk about this story, but the one that I want to focus on right now is, it's been a long time since we had any free-range grazing, right? But does anybody have family, or has anybody ever personally cared for animals, livestock? Yeah? In the country? Yeah? When you care for livestock, do you take measures to make sure that they are safe and secure, or do you intentionally put them at risk? Right, because they'll find risk all on their own, won't they? Unbelievably. Like, it doesn't even matter what kind of animal you're caring for. They find ways to get themselves in trouble, much like we do, right? They invent ways to get in trouble. Well, if you are caring for your father-in-law's flock, and this is something Moses had been doing for a while, do you think he would be taking his flock to an area he was unfamiliar with? Because understand, this isn't at a time when you have nice fenced-in pastures and you have everything where it's under your control. So the elements of surprise need to be limited as much as they can. So if you're herding this flock, do you, knowing that they're going to kind of go their own little ways anyway and you have to do the best you can to keep them corralled, do you take them to places you've never been before? Where you don't know if there's a foxhole around the corner? You don't know if there's a den over here? Yeah. Or do you work out your area, your territory, and the best you can, keep them in places that you know? Most every historian has said this is the practice of all shepherds, of all those who tended to animals, is that you would understand where you were going to be shepherding your flock. And you would know it well so that you could avoid risks at all cost, so that you could protect your investment. If one of your animals gets even wounded, the odds of that animal producing any income for you or being profitable, it goes way down. The chance of their survival goes way, way down. A snake bite, you don't have a veterinary clinic around the corner where you can load the animal in your pickup, but no. Like, this is you, and you're there to care for them. This is all you've got. So you're going to keep them in as safe an environment as you possibly can, an area you know very, very well. And Moses comes to this particular spot by Mount Horeb. And in this spot, he discovers something that he hasn't seen before. This bush that's on fire and that's raging. Well, you can go to places that you've known before and see things you've never seen before, right? That happens all the time. But when Moses approaches this spot, the Lord calls out to him, "Moses, Moses!" He says, "Here I am, Lord." And what does the Lord say to him? Yeah? "Take off your sandals. Take off your shoes. For the ground on which you are standing is holy ground." Do you think Moses had walked over that ground before? Yeah. Yeah, tons of times. Tons of times. He had been through there so many times. But this time, when he came to this space, there was something different. And he had eyes to see something that he hadn't seen before. And in this space, because God was with him in a special way, God says, "Take note. Okay. This ground is holy. We're having a holy moment. We're having a time that is not like other times. This, you need to be fully present here. You need to recognize this time is set apart. This space where we are, this is set apart." And then he tells him, the Lord, tells Moses that he has seen the affliction of his people. Now, did Moses know the affliction of his people? Yeah. Yeah, he had been there. He had seen it. Was this anything new to him? Do you think his heart broke for people that he knew that were his people, that he knew how they were being treated? Yeah. But he just kind of kept on tending his flock, right? Why? It was his job, yeah. I think we could maybe even go a little bit further. Has there ever been something that you care about, but you don't do anything about? Right? Yeah. Yeah, I think it's easier not to deal with it. I think it's also sometimes a matter of, we don't feel like there's anything we can do anyway. Do you know what Egypt was like at this time? Superpower. Think superpower. Okay? They had slave labor to build storehouses for the wealth they were amassing. Like it wasn't even, this was about incredible power, incredible force, incredible dominance. They were unchallengeable. And we've seen this rise and fall lots and lots and lots of times. I mean, this happens, right? But at this time in history, Egypt is, if you mess with Egypt, you're not going to win, especially if you're one person. And especially if you're a wanted murderer in that land, especially if, you know. So what are you going to do? Like at that point, it doesn't really matter how much you care. What exactly are you going to do? And God meets with Moses in this space where this bush is on fire because of the Lord and not being consumed. And reveals to Moses not just that there's oppression in Egypt. Moses knew that. But that God was going to do something about it. And that God wanted to work through him. It'd be like, think of something in your own life or in the life of somebody that you care about that you wish you could do something about. But you really kind of feel like there's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do. A loved one whose life is a wreck. An injustice around the world. Something. You know, what if God drew close to you and said, "You know this thing that's on your heart, this thing that's heavy, we're going to do something about this together." Would change your opinion, right, about what you were capable of doing, about what you were going to do? Yeah. And you may still feel like, I don't know if I can, Right? Like even the trusting part at that point, God's God, but I don't know, maybe it wasn't God. Maybe I was hearing things. Maybe I'm losing my mind, right? I mean, like we have a tendency, we're insecure creatures. We talk ourselves out of things. But there's something about God showing us something, revealing something to us. That moment when we come across the place where we've been 1,000 times before, and this time it's different. In this space, we see something we hadn't seen before, hear something we haven't heard before. It's different, and God gets our attention in a new way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I only know of one burning bush story. And there's lots and lots of people who followed God. And so I think some of us sit around waiting for our burning bush. We sit around waiting. We want this moment that is crystal clear. We want our burning bush. We want this spot. I don't want to question. I don't want to wonder. I don't want to kind of be curious. I want to know. I want that spot where I see something miraculous that I can't ignore. And God says, take your shoes off because I'm here. And I go, yes, God. And I kick my shoes off and I stand there. And God says, this is what we're going to do. And we're going to do it together. And this is how we're going to do it. Like how we want that, don't we? If every person who had ever followed God had waited on that, like God speaks and moves in all kinds of different ways. And if we're waiting on one thing, like we might wait our life and never have the opportunity to see it. But what if God is communicating with us in God's own way that maybe isn't a burning bush? Is it time? Good for her. Yeah, he's gone on long enough. That preacher's long-winded, isn't he? We should maybe do that. That's maybe a good idea right there. All right, that's all I got, folks. All right. Let's go downstairs. Where were we? Burning bushes. Yeah. Aha moments. What if God is giving us these moments all the time and we're really preoccupied with other stuff and we're just not seeing it? The transition team, we've been working at a lot of things, and I think I shared with you guys last week, it wouldn't really work, but it would be amazing if we were all going through it together at the same time, because when you work together with a group and you work for a few hours and you work for those few hours to try to figure out, okay, how do we all do something together? It's really about an equipping meeting. It's how are we going to work through this process in a way that everybody's on board, everybody understands, everybody's moving together. And sometimes that works really well, and sometimes it doesn't. And I think with the area that we're moving into, for me, is both the most exciting and it's the biggest opportunity for us to lose our commitment to the process that we're going through, because it requires change from the way we've done some things before, and it also requires a trust that what we're doing, what we're going through, is going to be worth it. That the reason why we're doing what we're doing, that it's going to be worth our while, that it's going to be worth our time. The first part of our experience together, you guys gave yourselves to fully. You shared your stories. You shared about what God's been doing in your life, what's been compelling to you, why you came here, why you stayed here, what it is about this community that has gotten you connected. We looked at the story of where this faith community has been in the past and kind of the history, the things that have moved this community in faith, the things that have gotten us committed and connected as a larger community throughout its lifetime, the ups and downs, peaks and valleys, the story of what's gone on with the community. Now this next piece is about discovery. And even as we've met with the transition team, we've already had like some questions about like, is this kind of how we want to do it? Because, and I'll tell you why. This is why. Because whenever we step into this, like, discovery, we make prejudgments in our minds about why we're doing what we're doing, and we want to decide right then and there if it's what we want to do or not. Right? Just like what Jared was saying in his words, in his call to worship, in his meditation, was this idea of kind of how we do that piece, maybe sometimes a little early. When you were talking about take up your cross and follow me. You know, we kind of make up our own minds of this next time that we have together, this work that we're going to do, it's going to be exciting. And it's going to be a time of discovery. And it is not a time of decision making. So what we are going to encourage you to be a part of, and we want every single person who's a part of this church to find a way to connect and be a part of this, this next movement, this next phase that we're going to work through is all about opening our eyes, opening our ears, and looking all around us to just simply see what can we discover. What is there that I hadn't seen before? What is there that I haven't heard before? What is there that I was not aware of? And does God have anything to tell me? Maybe, maybe not. If I don't ever look, I won't ever know. If I don't ever listen, I won't ever hear. So I'm going to go through a time together with this community of faith. And together we're going to listen, we're going to look, we're going to be patient and just see what does God have to show us, to teach us. One of the things that we want to do is we want to meet our neighbors. And the question came up in our meeting of, I don't know if our church really wants to reach out into the neighborhood and connect. I don't know if that's where we're at. I don't know if that's what we want to do. We are not deciding what we want to do right now. We are simply trying to discover, what does God have to show us? Is there something there that together we experience and we recognize, you know what, God's in this thing? Because this is my belief. When we discover something that God's in around us, who doesn't want to be a part of whatever God's doing? Nobody, right? We all want to be a part of whatever God's doing. We just have some questions or disagreements about what God might be doing, right? Like, that happens all the time. But every once in a while, we experience something that is like a burning bush, where we just go, oh, yeah, like, this is, God is in this. How many of us care about the homeless? How many of us care enough to do something about it actively? Truthfully. Come on now. God's here. Yeah. Like, okay, so we're gonna, yeah, I care. I don't know what I can really do about it. I don't know what difference I can really make. And so if I said, hey, you know what? There's some people who don't have enough to eat. And so next Sunday, let's bring some extra groceries in. Let's bring some food in, okay? Can we do that? You'd probably be like, yeah, all right. Right? I suppose. You're right. I know there's people who don't have enough food. I know it's the right thing to do. I know. And I know I could afford a couple extra groceries in the cart. So fine, I'll do it. Right? I mean, we may not actually do it that way, but in here, that's kind of where we're at, right? Have you ever met someone who didn't have enough to eat? Like, met them, like, encounter, not just kind of, oh, look, there's somebody who doesn't have enough to eat. I mean actually connected with somebody, known their name, known their story, sat with them long enough to know who they are, and found out that their kids eat lunch Monday through Friday because they're free at school. But Saturday and Sunday they don't, because they don't have anything in the pantry. Have you ever met somebody like that? I promise you this, when you do, their pantry's not empty anymore. When you meet somebody like that, you go, this isn't right. I don't have much, but I've got ramen in my counter. You know, I'll go home. We can get them Kraft mac and cheese. We can get, like, when you encounter that person, all of a sudden this thing that, yeah, I kind of cared about, now all of a sudden you go, well, this is an injustice. And not only is this an injustice, I have what is needed to right this wrong. I have what's needed to provide what is missing. I have whatever it takes to do this. every once in a while you come across something that's a little bit bigger than that, right? It's a little bit more than what you can personally accomplish. And in those moments, it's either like, well, I guess there's nothing I can do, or there's community. There's this notion that when we're together, we can accomplish something that as individuals we can't. That when we pull together, when we band together, when we decide, you know what? Let's celebrate this love of Jesus together. Let's be one family. Yes, let's worship and celebrate and give thanks. But part of that, let's respond to the grace and love and mercy that God is pouring into us. Well, how do we decide how we're going to respond? How do we respond what we're going to do? Churches all across this country struggle with how do we respond together as a community. What's the thing that everybody's going to want to be a part of? And most of the time, we struggle. We stub our toe because, oh, whatever it is the church is wanting to do, that's not my thing. Or maybe it's my thing, but it's not your thing. Or maybe it's whatever. Like, churches all over struggle to find that uniting movement where we say, yes, I can give myself to that. Yes, when God asks for me to engage, I can pour myself in. And the reason why that happens is not because finally it's something I want to do. That happens. But when it really becomes a movement in a faith community, it's God is undeniably in this thing. And if God's in it, I'm in it. This thing is undeniably the work of God, the work of the Spirit. God is in this thing. And if God's in it, I'm all in. This next phase that we are going into as a community is all about opening our eyes, opening our ears, and just seeing what does God have to show us that we haven't seen before. And maybe we don't find anything. Maybe we go through this discovery phase where we try to understand what's going on around us. We try to actually encounter the community around us. We try to see what the other churches are involved in. What are they doing? We try to see what's the cultural things that are happening all around us. Maybe we look at that and we go, yeah, I don't know. Right? Like, maybe that happens. But I highly, highly doubt it. Because in every space, in every environment, there is a need for the movement of the Spirit, isn't there? It doesn't matter whether you're in the poorest neighborhood or the wealthiest neighborhood. It doesn't matter whether the neighborhood is white, black, Hispanic. It doesn't matter where we come from. It doesn't matter what our background is. There is this need for the movement of God, isn't there? And the biggest trouble is that we don't know what that movement is. A lot of times we end up trying to create it. I think we need this. And that's fine when we do the best that we can. But what if we slow down from everything else, we look, we listen, and we just see, does God have anything to say to us? Is God revealing something to us together? Where when we see it, we go, yeah, God is in that. There's a women's ministry here in Fort Wayne that deals with women who've been convicted of felony level crimes, and they are to be sentenced to prison. But instead, there is this place called Redemption House. They are an alternative to women's prison. They get sentenced there by a judge. They're not connected to the state or to the government. They're a nonprofit, faith-based group. But they actually have women who are sentenced there. They're given house arrest bracelets. They're not allowed to leave without permission. But they go there and they relearn what it's like to function in society. They learn basic skills. They learn relational skills. They learn Bible study. They learn all this stuff. How many of us think the prison system's kind of busted up? Yeah. It's overpopulated. It's not really a very just system. And it also doesn't really seem to be helping. If you study it at all, the people who end up in the prison system have this ridiculously high recidivism. They end up going back. The people who end up in prison end up going back. They don't end up oftentimes rehabilitated. That does occur, but more often than not, people end up going back. Do you know how high the odds go up of you going to prison if your parents went to prison? Astronomical. Astronomical. So the problem is not just unjust for one person. It's actually a snowball effect where this becomes generational. And before long, it starts affecting other people. So we look at this sort of thing and we say, oh, I don't know if that's too bad. That's a bad thing. I hope we could elect somebody who could solve this, right? Does that work out? No. No. I mean, are there people who might be able to pass legislation and do things that can improve it? Sure. Sure. But in reality, we're not necessarily looking at that as that's where our solution's going to come from. And we kind of feel handcuffed ourselves. But every once in a while, you come across something and you go, oh, look, here's something God's doing over here. We kind of discovered this ministry of these people, this group. They take these women in, they teach them life skills, and they have something like a 68% success rate with moving these women out of a life of difficulty, crime, and repetition, and moving them into a new way of life. Is that perfect? No. Is it better? You bet. And you start looking at this and you go, they're teaching values of living like Jesus. Like they're actually teaching these women what it's like to live lives of gratitude instead of lives of demand or of disappointment. They're teaching them how to interact with other people as though those people are made by God instead of those people are kind of there for you to take advantage of. They're teaching these women things that I think are just what I've experienced from God myself. And you start to discover these things and you go, huh, I could be a part of a solution. Like, I may not be able to solve the problem, but I could be a part of the solution. These kinds of things, you have your own stories, don't you? Of the places where you've discovered something that rang in your heart, that resonated with you, and you said, I can be a part of that. We have these personal stories. We have these things that have happened to us as individuals. This season that we're stepping into is about doing that together. It's about discovery. What is God doing around us? Is there a burning bush in the land we have been walking over and over again, and we just haven't seen it? We just haven't had eyes to see it. So I want to encourage you in your own personal faith, but also in the corporate life of this church, to enter into a time of discovery with wide-eyed wonder, believing, trusting that God still has something to show us, still has something to reveal to us, with a childlike enthusiasm and curiosity of, God, what will you show me? I don't need to make any decisions. I don't need to draw any lines right now. I just want to see, what are you doing? And then we'll see if there's anything for me to do, for you to do, for us to do in it. Would you pray with me? Gracious God, we just ask that you would give us what we need so that we can receive you in a new way. You have drawn close to us and poured love out upon us. You have saved us and redeemed us. And now, O God, you have placed calling upon us. You have invited us to be a part of this faith community that moves and breathes and celebrates the love that you have poured out upon us. God, may we seek you in a new way. May we celebrate your love in a new way. May we experience you in a new way that causes us to recognize you were at work among us, and then help us to be a part of that. God, may your Spirit be upon us now and always. Guide us, renew us, uphold us. In Jesus' name, amen. As we talk about this as a community, and as we talk about our future, where we're going and what we're doing, it is a right and proper discipline for us to remember who we are and who God is. On the night in which he was betrayed, Jesus took bread. After he had given thanks, he broke it. And he said, "This is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Eat this bread and remember how much God loves you. Eat this bread and remember that Christ has redeemed you, has saved you. Eat this bread and retell the story to yourself that God has not withheld anything in pouring out grace upon you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, Jesus took the cup. And after giving thanks, he said, "This cup is a new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for the forgiveness of sins of many. Drink of it, all of you. This cup is about the relationship you have with your Maker. This reconciled system and how you move forward in celebration of the love and life God has given you.
Oh.